Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1957 with a release date of Friday, March 20th, 2015 follows in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST, another big surprise from sunspot AR2297 as it hurls a massive solar flare towards Earth. Cyclone Pam devastates Vanuatu's infrastructure, cutting it off from the world. The Dayton Hamvention names its 2015 award winners. The next Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference will take place this June in Finland. Hams in Colorado now have their own tower and antenna protection law, and proof that wireless power can be transmitted using microwaves. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1957 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Mississippi, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
Space weather reports March 15th began with a solar bang. Between 0045 and 0200 UTC, a magnetic filament erupted in concert with a slow C9-class solar flare from sunspot AR2297 that hurled a coronal mass ejection, or CME, into space. At that time, modeling by analysts at the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration suggested that the cloud would deliver a glancing blow to Earth's magnetic field during the late hours of March 17th. They also estimated there will be a 50% chance of geomagnetic storms when the CME arrived. But they were in for quite a surprise. A severe storm smacked Earth with a surprisingly big geomagnetic jolt on Tuesday, March 17th. Two blasts of magnetic plasma that left the sun separately combined and arrived on Earth about 15 hours earlier and much stronger than expected. Forecasters figured it would come late Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. Instead, it arrived just before 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The storm ranked a 4 on the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration's 1 to 5 scale for geomagnetic effects. It's the strongest solar storm to blast Earth since the fall of 2013. It's been nearly a decade since a level 5 storm termed extreme has hit the Earth. It had forecast to arrive at a level 1. Packing winds of close to 200 miles an hour, Category 5 Cyclone Pam caused severe damage when it hit the Pacific nation of Vanuatu on March 13th. Vanuatu's government declared a nationwide state of emergency, and Australia and New Zealand were among the first to send in relief supplies. The cyclone tore apart the infrastructure on Vanuatu's 12 inhabited islands and all but isolated it from the world. And as far as we've been able to determine, this was a case where not even amateur radio could fill in the communications gap, mainly because there are very few resident hams living there, nor does there seem to be an established emergency calling frequency on any of the amateur bands. About the closest thing to a ham radio response frequency might be the Pacific Maritime Net on 14.300 megahertz, but what assistance, if any, was provided by this group is unknown as we go to air. Nor is it known if the non-ham radio Vanuatu Net, which operates daily at 2030 UTC during cruising season on 8.230 megahertz, was activated. The restoration of communications with Vanuatu required first responders from other nations arriving with their own communications gear, primarily satellite phones. It was only then that the full extent of the devastation that Cyclone Pam caused to Vanuatu was made known to the world. Amateur radio likes to claim that it's there when all other means of communications have failed, but in this case, there were simply no hams on Vanuatu to respond. The 2015 Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference, better known as GARIC 2015, will take place June 23rd and 24th in Tampere, Finland. This year's event is being hosted by the Finnish Amateur Radio League and is being organized by Finland's National Emergency Communication Society, the SRT. The theme is Cooperating with Authorities. Already announced as part of the program is International Amateur Radio Union Region 1 Emergency Communications Coordinator Greg Mossop, G0DUB. He'll chair a discussion on the theme of what amateur radio has done to communicate with authorities when called upon to do so. Program Committee Chairman Dr. Seppo Sasada, OH1VR, will review GARIC from 2005 to 2015 in relation to non-government emergency relief agencies. Reports will also be provided by representatives of International Amateur Radio Unions Region 1, 2, and 3 in a session chaired by SRT President Jiri Putkonen, OH7JP. This year's gathering is kind of a homecoming for the Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference. It was in Tampere, Finland, that the first such conference was held back in 2005. More information on this year's gathering is available at radioturva.fi/GARIC-2015. The South African Radio League will assist the Radio Society of Zambia with the licensing of amateurs in that country. In accordance with requirements of the International Telecommunications Union, the Zambian authorities require what's known as a harmonized amateur radio examination certificate before issuing a license. In the past, the certificate was provided by the United Kingdom's City and Guilds Organization after Zambian candidates passed its amateur exam, but this arrangement is no longer in place. So the Radio Society of Zambia approached the South Africa Radio League to conclude an understanding whereby the Zambian candidates can instead take the South African examination. Under the new agreement, Zambian amateur radio candidates will be tested for the South African examination. For this purpose, a South African Radio League examination center will be registered in Zambia. The Radio Society of Zambia will provide the venue, test personnel, security arrangements, and cover all costs. On completion of a test session, the answer sheets will be returned to South Africa and will be marked, after which any harmonized amateur radio examination certificates will be couriered to the Radio Society of Zambia for those candidates who pass. Zambian authorities have already agreed to accept the certificates issued by the South African Radio League. This arrangement is similar to one that the South Africa Radio League already has in place with the Namibian Amateur Radio League. The Federal Communications Commission is considering downsizing its enforcement bureau and field office operations. In a very governmental-sounding reply, an FCC spokesperson responded to an inquiry from the online publication Radio Inc. regarding the rumor of the downsizing in the field operations. To quote the response, "The Commission recently completed a thorough, data-driven review of our field programs with an eye toward improving efficiency while meeting our responsibilities, both today and in the future. The Commissioners are considering a proposal that meets those goals." End of quote. In its report, the ARRL went further. According to an internal March 10th FCC Enforcement Bureau memorandum obtained by the League, the Bureau plans to ask the full Commission to cut two-thirds of its field offices and eliminate nearly one-half of its field agents. Under its Phase 1 field modernization scheme, the Bureau will recommend to the full Commission that it adjust the primary focus of its reduced field office complement to RF spectrum enforcement. It will also recommend adjusting the number of field agents from 63 to 33. At the same time, the Bureau will develop a so-called Tiger Team of field agents as a flexible strike force it could deploy as needed. ARRL's Dave Sumner notes that the League is concerned that there is already no sense of urgency in the FCC's enforcement activities, targeting spectrum polluters such as utilities with noisy power lines or the few violators in our own ranks. He went on to say that it's troubling to see recommendations for such drastic reductions in the Commission's geographic footprint and the number of field agents at a time when the field staff is facing ever-increasing challenges. Radio Inc. seemed to echo the ARRL's concern, but in relation to a different enforcement target. It said that with the Commission taking fewer and fewer actions against pirates, this news will be troublesome for many broadcasters, especially those in markets where such unlicensed signals are still a major issue. According to the online magazine, actions against AM, FM, and shortwave pirate stations last year were at their lowest level since 2000. In 2014, fewer than 200 actions were taken against these stations, including those in New York, New Jersey, Florida, and Boston, which are still hotspots for pirate broadcast activity. You can read the Radio Inc. article at tinyurl.com/LZZHT96. The ARRL's very in-depth look at the Enforcement Bureau proposed downsizing is at tinyurl.com/PAC2LUZ. In DX Upfront, word that Glenn Johnson, W0GJ, the co-team leader of the recent K1N Navassa Island D expedition, has written a detailed article regarding all aspects in planning and executing this recent operation. The article gives the complete story showing that D expeditions of this scale take professional levels of planning, negotiations, and execution required during every step of the way. You can download a full-color copy from the Twin Cities DX Association website. You'll find that at tinyurl.com/the-k1n-story. The exact dates are still not known for the DX0P operation from Pagasa Island that's supposed to take place sometime in April. Over the past 2 weeks, it was mentioned that the team must leave Manila for Palawan Island on April 13th to recover their stored equipment. The plan was to stay overnight in Palawan and then go the next day to Pagasa. Once there, activity is planned for 160 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, RTTY, and JT65. If you make contact, QSLs are to go via WA6LOS. For the latest information and updates, be sure to check facebook.com/DX0P2015. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WB9AER repeater serving Madison, Wisconsin. The Dayton Hamvention has named the recipients of this year's awards. They are Tim Duffy, K3LR, as Amateur of the Year, Tom Medlin, W5KUB, as Special Achievement Award winner, the Reverend George Dobbs, G3RJV, who gets the Technical Excellence Award, and the Orlando Amateur Radio Club as Club of the Year. Amateur of the Year, Tim Duffy, K3LR of West Middlesex, Pennsylvania, has a long history of giving back to amateur radio. He's founder, promoter, and chairman of the successful Contest University, which has helped to teach radio sport contest operating with excellent volunteer professors. The first Contest University was held in Dayton in 2007. Since then, more than 3,700 radio sport enthusiasts have attended 25 Contest University sessions held in 8 different countries under his watchful guidance. The Dayton Hamvention Special Achievement Award recognizes the 14 years of service that Tom Medlin, W5KUB, has provided through W5KUB.com, a worldwide webcast of live ham radio events. From his start as helmet cam man, he's grown the webcast to cover all aspects of amateur radio, from such events as the Dayton Hamvention to field day, vendor tours, special technical discussions, and special events such as K6H from the stage of Last Man Standing in Hollywood. The webcast recently added a weekly live amateur radio program which remotely brings in guests from around the world. The W5KUB.com viewer base has reached approximately 50,000 unique operators in about 150 countries. The Dayton Hamvention Technical Excellence Award has been given to the Reverend George Dobbs, G3RJV, who has helped many amateur radio operators build their own equipment. Currently, G3RJV writes a monthly practical construction column, continuing the Practical Way for the Practical Wireless magazine, and the QRP column for the Radio Society of Great Britain magazine, Radio Communication. He authored the book QRP Basics and jointly compiled the International QRP Collection for the RSGB. Club of the Year is the Orlando Amateur Radio Club with the club call of W4PLB. This is the largest and oldest amateur radio club in Central Florida with consistently over 300 members. It's an ARRL special service club and offers many outlets for amateur radio enjoyment and growth. The members of the Orlando Amateur Radio Club take great pride in planning for the future of amateur radio and preserving the history of technology. Annual events include the Orlando Hamcation, which is sponsored and financially supported by the Orlando Amateur Radio Club, whose members contribute their time and effort in promoting this high-quality Hamfest. All will be honored guests when Hamvention 2015 opens in Hera Arena May 15th. Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper has signed into law an amateur radio antenna bill that mirrors the PRB1 federal preemption policy. Hickenlooper put his signature on the measure on March 13th after the Colorado General Assembly, without amendment, passed Senate Bill 15-041, which had been introduced in early January. Bill 15-041 specifies that no local government shall enact or enforce an ordinance or resolution regulating amateur radio antennas that fails to conform with PRB1's reasonable accommodation provisions. This measure was jointly sponsored by Colorado Senator Chris Hulbert and Representative Kevin Van Winkle. According to Colorado Section Manager Jack Ciacci at WM0G, this was truly a bipartisan bill with terrific support from both sides of the aisle in both legislative chambers. The National Weather Service is looking for individuals in Oakland County, Michigan, to participate in a Skywarn program that aims to save lives by providing free training for severe weather spotters. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, has the details.
The program is being coordinated by the Oakland County Homeland Security Division, which will host classes in various locations across the county during March and April. During the sessions, instructors will walk participants through a recap of last year's severe weather outbreaks and take a look at how spotters played a role in helping with warning operations. Attendees will also learn how to report severe weather events via amateur radio or telephone to the National Weather Service, this while also learning how to remain safe while doing so. After completion of the class, volunteers will be tasked with keeping an eye on the sky and reporting severe weather in their own neighborhoods. Currently, some 5,000 spotters across 17 counties in southeast Michigan participate in the Skywarn program, but more are always needed. This is because the footprint of any given storm is often relatively small, and a trained spotter is not always available in the storm's path. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
Those in Oakland County, Michigan, wishing to participate in the classes should visit oakgov.com/homelandsecurity and click on the Skywarn logo to register. Brent D. Cullen, KD0YLM, has had his general class license downgraded to technician, but not because he did anything wrong. Rather, it's another of those annoying clerical errors on the part of the volunteer examination coordinator that happen from time to time. Newsline's Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, has the backstory.
On December 3rd, 2014, the ARRL Volunteer Examiner Coordinator sent an electronic data file to the Commission requesting that Cullen's operator license for amateur station KD0YLM be modified to upgrade from technician to general class amateur radio operator privileges. Based on this application, the Commission granted Cullen a general class amateur service operator license on December 3, 2014. By correspondence dated January 16, 2015, the ARRL notified the Commission that there was an error in the December 3, 2014 data file and that a licensee other than Cullen had qualified for a general class operator license. The ARRL noted that a correction was filed, resulting in the other licensee receiving the operator license for which he had qualified, but that Cullen's operator privileges had not been returned to technician class operator privileges. As a result, the FCC proposed to modify the license for station KD0YLM to show technician class operator privileges effective as of March 16th. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, in Topeka, Kansas.
Marked down April 18th is the day that radio amateurs worldwide take to the airwaves in celebration of World Amateur Radio Day. It was on that day in 1925 that the International Amateur Radio Union, or IARU, was formed in Paris, France. Since its founding, the IARU has worked tirelessly to defend and expand the frequency allocations for amateur radio. Thanks to the support of enlightened administrations in every part of the globe, radio amateurs are now able to experiment and communicate in frequency bands strategically located throughout the radio spectrum. Today, amateur radio is more popular than ever, with over 3 million licensed operators scattered around the globe. World Amateur Radio Day is the day when IARU member societies can show our capabilities to the public and enjoy global friendship with other amateurs worldwide. And in helping to keep with the spirit of the event, the IARU is providing a downloadable poster for World Amateur Radio Day 2015. Any group may download it and have it printed locally. It's in Adobe PDF format at tinyurl.com/ward-poster-2015. Some names in the news. First up, best-selling author and active radio amateur operator Don Keith, N4KC, has just published his 29th book, titled The Ship That Wouldn't Die. It's described as an epic and true World War II story about a crucial but little-known incident at the Battle of the Coral Sea. Don Keith has written both fiction and nonfiction on many subjects, including submarines, college football, broadcasting, World War II history, and inspirational fiction. His book, Firing Point, co-written with former Navy submarine skipper George Wallace, is in pre-production as a major motion picture set to release in 2016 under the title Hunter Killer. N4KC is active in all aspects of the hobby, is an ARRL member, and holds the Extra Class Amateur Radio License. His amateur radio website, which includes many articles for ham radio enthusiasts, is at www.n4kc.com. And Justin Galder, AC8PI, has announced the creation of a new high-frequency youth net. According to AC8PI, its purpose is to serve as a meeting place for young hams on the HF bands and to provide short contacts between those who've checked in. Listen out for it on 20 meters between 14.320 and 14.330 megahertz on Sunday afternoon between 2 and 3 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Researchers have achieved success in creating a unique type of 3D printer that's capable of working on an atomic scale, as we hear from Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
Dr. Martin D. Burke is a professor of chemistry at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and one of the researchers involved in this project. He explains that the traditional way of synthesizing small molecules requires a step-by-step series of chemical reactions. This is a process that is both time-consuming and requires enormous expertise. But the new molecule-level printer changes all of this. To create the printer, Burke and his collaborators analyzed the structures of thousands of molecules and identified the chemical building blocks shared by a large majority of them. The machine essentially snaps these building blocks together like Legos, and then washes away the byproducts. So far, the device is capable of building 14 classes of small molecules, and the researchers hope to develop the technology to the point that it can assemble almost any kind of small molecule. The researchers say that their molecule-making machine could revolutionize the drug development process, as well as simplifying the fabrication of solar cells and other high-tech products. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The research was published March 13th in the online journal Science. You'll find more at tinyurl.com/molecule-making-printer. The Amateur Radio on the International Space Station, or ARIS, program is seeking formal and informal education institutions and organizations individually or working together to host an amateur radio contact with a crew member on board the ISS in 2016. ARIS anticipates that such a contact would be held between January 1st and June 30th of 2016. Crew scheduling and space station orbits will determine the exact contact dates. To maximize these radio contact opportunities, ARIS is looking for organizations that will draw large numbers of participants and integrate the contact into a well-developed education plan. The deadline to submit a proposal is April 15, 2015. Proposal information and documents can be found at www.arrl.org/hosting-an-ARIS-contact. LambdaSat, the first Greek CubeSat, was released from the International Space Station March 4th, and its developers have invited radio amateurs around the world to listen for its signal and to file reports. The one-unit-sized CubeSat transmits AX.25 protocol UI packets at 1,200 bits per second using AFSK on 437.462 megahertz. Its 1-watt transmitter identifies as KK6DFZ. LambdaSat was constructed entirely by young volunteers from Greece who traveled to California's Silicon Valley to participate in the project. More details are on the web at www.cyhams.org. The FunCube data warehouse has received some 2 million packets of telemetry data from ground stations around the world. FunCube 1, also known as AO73, was launched November 21, 2013. Since then, radio amateurs and schools have been receiving the telemetry packets transmitted by the satellite and passing them on to the AMSAT UK data warehouse for analysis and storage. Statistics as of 09:53 UTC March 15th show the number of registered users at 1,529, with active users in the last 2 weeks at 193. But here's where it gets really impressive. The number of packets transmitted by the satellite since deployment stands at over 8 million, while packets uploaded by users before deduplication sits at close to the same number. Deleting duplication, the number of packets stored in the warehouse is in the process of passing the 2 million mark. The United Kingdom-based Islands on the Air Committee has deleted Dino Island from its list of eligible entities. The actual decision came about this past January 1st after it was found that Dino no longer meets the requirements laid down for IOTA qualification. Dino Island, which had been assigned the designation EU-144, is an Italian entity located at 37.90 to 40.38 north latitude and 15.63 to 17.22 east longitude. But over the years, the distance separating the island from the mainland has reduced as the beach area gradually encroached into the channel and is now significantly less than the required 200 meters. When it made its announcement, the Islands on the Air Committee says that credit will continue to be given for contacts with Dino made before January 1st of 2015, but not for any made after that date. NDX F5IVC is now active as 5V7SM from Togo. He recently informed the Ohio Penn DX newsletter that he'll be there for professional reasons for upwards of 2 years or more. He also notes that he's currently only on 10 meters SSB, but is waiting for a multiband antenna to arrive. QSL info for now is via his French address on QRZ.com. 5T0JL has confirmed that he's been authorized to use the special call sign 5T2MM to operate from Mauritania between April 17th and the 20th, including the CQMMDX contest on April 18th and 19th. His QSL manager is PY4KL. DL1R-NT will be operational as 8Q7NT from Mbudu, South Mali Atoll in the Maldives between March 25th and April 2nd. Activity will be holiday style on 40 through 10 meters using mostly CW with some RTTY and PSK. QSL via his home call sign. And lastly, a reminder that three operators from Poland will activate Kathmandu, Nepal between March 18th and the 30th. Operators mentioned are SP2FUD, SP9FIH, and SQ9CNN. For more details, including updates and QSL routing, take your web browser to 9n.dexpeditions.org. And finally this week, wireless energy generated from space is now one small step closer to becoming a feasible delivery source of power. This following a new experiment that successfully transmitted electrical power using microwaves. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kenford, NAWB, has the details.
The Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, also known as JAXA, conducted the research, which sent 1.8 kilowatts of electricity 170 feet through the air in the form of microwave radiation. The beam was transmitted with a great degree of accuracy, showing the technique may be used on a larger scale. Engineers at JAXA have spent years researching new technologies to enable the delivery of energy from space-based solar collectors down to our home planet. Solar cells commonly power satellites, space probes, and the International Space Station. However, delivering that power to Earth in an economical manner is still a challenge facing developers. Now researchers say that the sun's energy might one day be collected by massive solar panels in space, and the energy generated from the systems could be sent to Earth in the form of highly directional microwaves. Such networks for generating electricity in space would have some advantages over ground-based systems. Solar collectors in space would not be subject to the cycles of day or night or cloudy conditions. Current plans to develop an orbiting energy generation system involve sending satellites with large solar panels into geostationary orbits more than 22,000 miles above the Earth. Challenges facing engineers include launching these massive solar arrays and maintaining them once they are on orbit. Because of these issues, JAXA engineers believe that a full network to generate electricity in space will not be available until sometime in the 2040s. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB in Wadsworth, Ohio.
According to the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, additional uses for the space-based power system could include sending electricity to remote regions in the wake of natural and man-made disasters. Future development of the current system could produce a device capable of transmitting and receiving energy from ocean platforms far from the nearest coast. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. You'll find that at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we go, a reminder that Amateur Radio Newsline is seeking nominations for its 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award. For consideration, a nominee must have used amateur radio in some way that has benefited his or her community or encouraged technological development directly or indirectly related to communications. Nominees must be 19 years or younger and reside in the United States, including Hawaii, Alaska, and Puerto Rico, or any of the Canadian provinces. The individual must also hold a current valid United States or Canadian amateur radio license. This award is not a contest. The person selected as Young Ham of the Year is judged on his or her overall accomplishments and contributions. Any prizes awarded are secondary in nature. The deadline for submitting an application is May 30th, 2015, and the decision of the judges' committee is final. To obtain an application, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award in care of Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. You can also download a form in Microsoft Word format at www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY, clicking on the word here and saving the file to print at a later time. Presentation of the 2015 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award will take place the weekend of August 15th and 16th at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Huntsville, Alabama. For now, with producers Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF in Los Angeles, and Skeeter Nash, N5ASH in Topeka, plus our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in South Mississippi, saying 7-3. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2015. All rights are reserved.